Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein with a response of the day for the 26th day of Nisan. Let's thank Rabbi Jacob Bromwich and David Nachhauser over at the OU who make these shiurim available to you online. And I want to point out that yesterday's response was also about issues of sort of faith and dealing with non-Jewish faiths. There was a woman who had been forced to convert to Christianity, and today we're going to talk about entering places of worship of other faiths. But I want to stress that I don't choose these to vote like right up next to each other. So it's not like I got into my head one day that I was into this question and that's why it came up. It's sort of every day that I'm looking, and I don't recall picking out two tshuvot on the same day in the same month or right next to each other. So there's usually at least 24 hours between the choice, and then I have a selection from among the possibilities. That's what I get to. So today's response, though, is also about issues of faith. Now, it's a conversation that actually started in an earlier tshuva, an earlier response of the Tzitzliezers, which is not from the 26th of Nisan. Eventually, we're going to get to a second response on that question. The one that's going to be for the 26th of Nisan is from the 18th volume of Tzitzliezer, the 47th of responsum, which is dated the 26th of Nisan of Tufshin Memchet of 1988. So we'll get there. That's the reason why it fits on this day. But the bulk of the content of the discussion was actually in the 14th volume of Tzitzliezer in response number 91, and that's dated from 1980, from Tufshin Mem. It's actually the 16th of Adar. We could have done it there, but we had other things to do at that time. So the question came from a Rev Shmuel Katz, who, as far as I can tell, is today, there's a Hebrew Wikipedia entry on a Shmuel Katz, who, as far as I can tell, is today the Rosh Yeshiva Yeshiva Chevron in Yerushalayim. Chevron was a yeshiva in Chevron for a while, and then in 1929, after the pogroms, they moved to Yerushalayim. They have a yeshiva called Chevron Yerushalayim, which is that original yeshiva, its continuity. He today, I think, is the Rosh Yeshiva there. And he says that he heard from Rav Shlomo Minahar. So Shlomo Minahar is a man who was the Rav of Bayit Vegan. Again, he has a Wikipedia entry, a Hebrew Wikipedia entry. He was the rabbi of Bayit Vegan, the neighborhood in Yerushalayim, for 40 years, from 1960, I think, like, till his passing. See, and he was it's an interesting conversation, because if I'm right, this Shmuel, Shmuel Katz, this is Rosh Yeshiva Chevron, which is what we would probably call a Haredi Yeshiva, or right wing, or whatever the terms are, right? Those terms aren't very comfortable or happy making. But Rosh Shlomo Minahar was more in the, probably what we would call the Chardal, the Haredi Dati Lumi camp. So it's just interesting, they're talking to each other and they're like friendly. And so he says he heard from Rav Shlomo Minahar that you, Tzitzliezer, who by this time is a 64-year-old man, he's not old, but he's a well-established, important Talmud Chacham. He said, I heard from you in your name that you hold that every house of worship of a religion other than Judaism has the halacha of a house of worship of avodah zarah, of worshiping a foreign power. Now, that's surprising for a bunch of reasons, but one of the reasons will be that we're going to include in this discussion mosques. And it's common to say, and we're not going to doubt it in this response at all, it's common to say that Islam is a monotheistic religion, and that they worship the one God who created heaven and earth, and in that sense, it's not an avodah zarah. So therefore, if the Tzitzliezer are going to hold, as he will, that it's a house of idolatry, of worshiping of a foreign power, that's an odd, it's a surprising, odd is not the right word, it's a surprising conclusion to reach, because it seems like it's a house of worship to worship Hashem, the same Hashem as we worship. True, they have a different religion, and they have a different set of practices that they've adopted, and that has perhaps a lack of complications, but that there would seem to be worshiping Hashem. So, this Rav Shmuel Katz, who at this time, if I'm right about who he is, was in his 30s. He's about 30, you know, was almost 30 years younger than Tzitzliezer, or a little more than 30 years younger than Tzitzliezer. He wants to know if it's true. He wants to know the source. And he knows how busy, you know, he apologized how busy the Tzitzliezer is. But he points out that soon it's going to be, so this is the original tshuva, let's remember, is in the 16th of Adar. Soon the yeshivas closed for the Pesach break, and during the Pesach break, lots of the young men from the yeshiva go on hikes on Tehillim. And so he needs to know about this. And one of the questions also that was included in the questions was, not only does it apply to mosques, but also what about not the inside of churches or their houses, of these houses of worship. But what about the courtyards? Because in a lot of these cases, some of these things are built on a hill, let's say, or a mountain, and they have this beautiful view around them. So you hike up the mountain, and then you go into the courtyard, to the walled, entry area. You're not going into the house of worship at all. You just want to look at the scenery. So will that be included as well? So there's a response. And I think that I want to introduce this by mentioning or pointing out or reminding us that it makes clear to us that we have often lost sight of just how the word that comes to mind is viscerally, but just how deeply, just how strongly the Gemara and the Mishnah wanted us to have an aversion to Avodah Zarah, to worship of anything other than Hashem. Now, over time, there are lots and lots of reasons why that's been diluted and mitigated, and I'm not questioning those reasons, right? So, Jacob Katz has a famous book called Exclusiveness and Tolerance, in which he documents the history of how it came about. The Balei HaTosafot said, the people that we live with, who were Catholics, at the time they weren't Catholics because there was no word like that, but who were the forerunners of what we today call Catholicism. So even though the Balei HaTosafot thought of them as idolaters, in some senses found many leniencies to make life more livable in cooperation with such people. And then the Meiri has famous statements about idolaters and how Christians aren't really idolaters, even though they're technically worshiping in ways that Halakha seems to think of as qualifying as Avodah Zarah. There's all history of how it comes about that we can deal with people who have beliefs that Halakha sees as a problem of Avodah Zarah, sees as a problem of worshiping something other than Hashem, and yet manage to live with them. All that is true, all that is real. So there's a point out, but let's start and look at what the Mishnah says about stuff. So the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Bet on page 11b says that a city that has an idolatry in it, an Avodah Zarah in it. I stress that idolatry doesn't only mean like a statue. It means any form of worship that worships a power other than Hashem, whether or not there's a physical representation of it. So just outside the city, around the city, you're allowed to go, is what the Mishnah says. So what about going into the city? So the Mishnah says, Bizman shederach miyuchedet lo tomakom asur. If the highway or the roads into the city are only for the purpose of getting to that city, and then they stop, sort of, and the city is an end point, then Mishnah seems to say you can't travel those roads because you're taking to the city. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnah, in his commentary in the Mishnah there, says that the question about traveling the road is only about going to someplace other than this city, because he says it's usur, it's prohibited to go into the city that has an worship of something other than Hashem in it, all the more so to live in it. And therefore, if the road, so the question was, let's say the road also goes to another city, but, and the answer in the Mishnah seems to have been that if it's miyuchedet to this city, it goes to the city, even though if it can go through and get to another city, you're still not supposed to travel on it. And therefore, back on the Rambam in the commentary on the Mishnah, yivadalecha, you need to know, shekol ir shel umah, sheyesh ba beit tifla, any city of a non-Jewish, of non-Jews that has one of these houses of worship in it. And he says, Shehu beit avodat kochavim b'lo safek. The Rambam says it. This is going to help us to Israel because a beit tifla really means a house of silliness, let's say. And it's going to help him because the Rambam lived in Muslim communities. He seems to be saying it's considered a beit avodat kochavim b'lo safek. Oto ha'ir asur la'avor b'chavan. You can't go through it, and all the more so to live in it. Aval anachnu, Rambam says, but we, and that's going to help us to the Ezra, because the we means, it clearly implies that it's true of Islam as well. We'll talk about why, but clearly seems to say that it's Islam as well. We, tachat yidehem, we are controlled by them, ba'avanotenu, in our great sins, and we live in there, and we have no choice but to live in their lands. The Rambam goes on and says, if that's true of the city, it's all the more true of the house of worship itself, and he says, it's almost usher even to look at it, let alone to go into it. So that's the end of the Rambam in the commentary on the Mishnah, and that's going to be very important to the Tzitzit Ezra, because the Rambam is clearly talking about Islamic communities and applying to them many of the issues, even though they would seem to be monotheists. So we'll get to it. And this won't come up in the tshuva. I just want to point out that you read that Rambam, and you have to start thinking to yourself about what does it mean to be an anus, to be coerced into living in a certain place. And that's, I think, a very hard set of questions. That's the definition of coercion. I think the Rambam was the doctor for the for the sultan or for the, you know, the ruler, and it could be that if he tried to leave, there would be a big problem. But the question of what's considered onus, I think, is an important one, although not the topic of our tshuva, and therefore not the topic of today's discussion. So back on the Tzitzel Ezer now, he says it's very clear in the realm you can't go into a house of worship of a power other than Hashem. Not only that, it's almost usher, he says, the Rambam says clearly, it's almost usher to see it. Like, looking at it is a problem. And he mentions that he was a child, he grew up in Yerushalayim. When he was a child, from the time he was little, when you needed to pass by a church, the adults would rush us. They would tell us not to look, and they would say, rush, and then as you're going by, say the word shaketz to shaketzani. You should treat it as an abomination as you go by. And he says, and I think this is the source, this Rambam is the source for that idea, that you should really try hard not to look at these things. And to remind you now, I want to say, I think it's important to say, that part of the point here is that we're supposed to absorb and remember and keep in mind that worshiping something other than Hashem in its proper and correct form is a deep problem. And we're going to see that the reason why Islam is going to be a problem too is because it's not a perfect religion. It's true that it's not idolatrous in the sense of believing in powers other than Hashem in those senses, but it has other elements to it. So to have a belief in Hashem in the proper ways is not so simple, and people go wrong. And as soon as they go wrong, then there's a problem. But he's talking about churches, right? In Yerushalayim, it's churches, and churches are the more so because beliefs in the Trinity and aspects of belief in the Trinity are really deeply problematic and might qualify in at least a technical halachic sense as avodah zarah, as actual worship of an idolatrous form of or power. And therefore, their tradition was you didn't look at it. And then he points out the Shulchan Aruch in Yerideya Paskin's rules. So this is now a ruling in Shulchan Aruch, which is late, relatively. Meaning, I mentioned before, the Baalei Tosfos and the Miri have all sorts of leniencies, and those are valuable and important leniencies. But the Shulchan Aruch, who's after them, still rules in Shulchan Aruch that in a city where they're making a Yerid B'Yom Chagam, they're making some kind of a festival or a carnival on a holiday of theirs. So the one that pops to my mind is there used to be, I never even came close to it, but I think in Lower Manhattan there used to be something called the Festival of San Gennaro, I think, which was like a celebration of some, you know, saint of theirs or whatever, and it was a big party, a big festival. So the Shulchan Aruch rules, you can't go into the city in those situations. You can't go to the fair. You can't go into the city. Now, what's qualified as the city would be an interesting question, but, right, because if it's in Lower Manhattan, and I work in mid-Manhattan, or I work 7 blocks away, so in Manhattan is a complicated place, is that all considered part of the city? That's the Pesach of Shulchan Aruch, and I'm not telling you how that applies to various things today, but this is just pointing out that rule still applies by the time of the Shulchan Aruch. Then the more important point is that the Shach commenting on that passage in the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam that we just saw, the Rambam in the Pesach Mishnah, the Rambam in the commentary on the Mishnah, and that a Beit HaVodah Zarah, that the house of worship itself, we almost can't even look at, and all the more so we can't go into, and that's one set of sources that are relevant. So too, there's another source, the Gemara in HaVodah Zarah, Yitzayin HaMed Aleph, that's Paskin in Shulchan, meaning that's recorded as normative, as authoritative, as obligatory upon us in Yerideya Kuf Nun. Siman 150, Dimitzvah Litrachek Miderech Elilim Dalet Amot. Really, if there's a road that goes to idolatries, we should stay away from the road for Amot, and it's all the more so prohibited to go in there. So all that would be about going in. So that would be about the courtyard or the garden area, or, you know, the grounds of a church or a mosque that just has a great view out of it. See, there he says, you want to go in, you only want to do a sit-down. So he points out the Ramah in Yerideya. So that's the Ashkenazic view. And the reason why that's valuable is because, again, Baalei HaTosfot had various leniencies. So if the Ramah in the late 1500s is going to rule in a more stringent way, that means that even on the basis of all those leniencies, there's still this stringency that was left in place. So in Kuf Mem Tet, in 149, paragraph 2, he paskins, Chatzir shel avodat kol chavim, yesh amrim dino ki'ir. So some people paskin, some people rule that the grounds of, right, the courtyard, the grounds, the garden, all those, grounds is the right word, sorry, I keep reaching for a better word, but I think that's it. Some people say it's like the city that the Mishnah talked about. Remember, the Mishnah said that if you a city that has an avodah zarah in it, that has a house that has a worship of some power other than Hashem in it, the whole city is a problem. So some paskin that the chatzer is like the ear, like the city, and that at a time when the people who worship this power other than Hashem gather together to for some kind of service, right? So let's say there's a, in Christian terms, you would say there's a mass going on there, then you couldn't go in. But other than that, you could go in because it's like a city. But the Yesh Obrim, the second view that the Ramah quotes is, Nibichol Inyan Asur, that it's always Asur, Im Ein Derech Over Bo L'Makom Acher. Unless there's some kind of a road or a highway that happens to pass through that courtyard, meaning let's say the church was built and then at some point, you know, they broke through, or the church was built around the road. So if there's a road that goes through anyway to other places, it's not the road to here. It's a road that goes through to other places. So then you can, there are those who say that you can travel that road. But other than that, you can't go there. And that's the simple custom, to take roads that go through courtyards, to go through the grounds of churches, if you need to. But it would be more pious, more proper, more meritorious to not even go on that road if you don't have to. If you have a road that's just as short, just as efficient, better take that other road. As I'm saying this, I'm thinking about the fact that sometimes, anyway, I've thought of, there are situations where I'll be told by, you know, a Waze program, let's say, to go through a park that has a monastery in it and whatever. Okay, something to think about as to how we take roads, right? But that's not the issue here. The point here is that the Ramah has two views, and the Tzitzit points out that our general assumption is that when the Ramah quotes two views, he means the second one to be the halacha. He quotes the first view. The lenient view is that as long as there's not services going on, there's not the worshippers of this avodah zarah, of this power other than Hashem, the worshippers of this house of worship aren't there right now for a service, that you could go in. But the second opinion is that you shouldn't go in ever, and you shouldn't even take roads that go there, even just on the road, unless that road was, it goes through to somewhere else. Teaches us, says the Tzitzit, that it's prohibited to go into the grounds just to spend time on the grounds, even if they're not gathered there for any particular church service or kind of religious ceremony. And the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, points out to the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayos that the Tzitzit Eliezer started us off with. So that would seem to say that that is prohibited as well. So then he says, but you might think, there's another halacha in Yeridia. This is one of the leniencies that I have been mentioning that people found along the way. In Kuf Mem Mechet, 148.12, so the Shulchan Aruch writes, the Yesh Omrim, that all of these stringencies, all of these rules that Chazal made in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, only applied in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara. Aval bizman hazeh, nowadays, inam bikiim b'tiv elilim, since idol worshippers, the people we think of as idol worshippers, the adherents of these religions that we call Avodah Zarah, that we have a problem with as Avodah Zarah, so you might think, so the Shulchan Aruch rules, that we today are allowed to treat them more leniently than the Gemara's stringencies, and the reason we're allowed to do so is because they don't really know what it means to worship an idol. They become less firm about it, is what the leniency of the Tosafot was. So that's Paskin the Shulchan Aruch as well. So you might think, well, if we're going to hold that they don't know what they're doing so much, and therefore you can be lenient about various things, maybe that applies to this issue of going onto the grounds of the house of idol of Avodah Zarah. So the Shulchan Aruch says, let me quote you a response of Chaim Biyad of Rav Chaim Falaji. Now, Rav Chaim Falaji, I want to point out, I'm reading the biography from my Bar Ilan. He's born in 1788 in Turkey. He becomes the head of the Beis Din of Izmir in Turkey, of Smyrna, Izmir, and then he becomes the chief rabbi of Turkey. So Turkey is a very much an Islamic country, and that's going to be relevant to the Tshuva, because as he's going to rule on these issues, that's what he's talking about. So he says, Rav Chaim Falaji writes, in terms of going into a beit avodah zarah shelahem, he has a long discussion of the seriousness of the prohibition, and even including the grounds, the courtyard, the gardens, whatever it is. Even, he says, I feel the very mechanehem, you're going to go in, not because you want to use it for the view, meaning once you use it for the view, you're getting benefit from it, and that you can imagine being a problem. He's saying, even if you just have to say something to one of the people who was in there, even if, I feel Ali Skei Rabim, even if there's a communal need. I remember there was a discussion a few years ago about whether or not the chief rabbi of England could go to, like, I don't know if it was a wedding or a coronation. It must have been a wedding. There's been a coronation a long time. some kind of a ceremony that was going to take place in, now they're Protestants there, so maybe that helps, but in churches, right, and I think for a wedding. So there's all discussion about, since the chief rabbi is a representative of the Jewish community and is important in terms of helping keep people happy with the Jewish community and relations with the government there, maybe that's the thing. There are those who are lenient, but he, Ratzitz Eliezer, is not ruling leniently. And maybe I want to remind you that just because those are Paschal doesn't mean there aren't other versions of Pesach out there. We just learn the response of the come our way. So Chaim Falaji says, even if it's not their holiday, even if it's for an ulterior motive of talking to somebody, even if it's for the benefit of the community at large or of the masses, and then at the end of that discussion where he's saying it's all prohibited, he says, and don't think that we can follow that Shulchan Aruch that we had just mentioned, that nowadays they are not as adept at Avodah Zarah as they used to be, and therefore we have various leniencies. Chaim Falaji says, and since he's quoting it because he agrees with it, Dizehu legabe ha-goyim. That means in terms of the non-Jews themselves. We don't have to respond to them as the kind of idolaters, as of Dei Avodah Zarah, as we would have needed to in the time of the Gemara. That's true, he says. But that doesn't apply to Beit Tefilatam. And by the way, he's bailing with a tet, which means they're houses of stupidity, not their houses of prayer. And he says, Dimekatrin, they offer incense. And I have to say, that offering incense, maybe he might be thinking about churches in Turkey. There are also churches in Turkey as well. So he might have been talking about churches as opposed to mosques in particular. We'll get to mosques in a moment. So they offer incense to their worship, to their power. And offering incense is what the Gemara defines as one of the ways that if you offer it to power other than Hashem, even if it's not that way of that power's form of worship, even if the most of the worshipers don't worship that way, that's always considered an act of worship since we worship Hashem that way in the Beit HaMikdash. So he's saying, since they do this, and since it's a leftover, a remnant of the original Avodah Zarah, the original worship that they used to have, so it may be true that it's not Avodah Zarah Mamash, but it's leftover tumah, leftover defilement, and therefore you still need to treat it in some sense as Avodah Zarah. So for example, if somebody, God forbid, worshipped, so we say when, and they converted to that such a place, when they come back, we require them to go to mikvah, and some people would accept malko, some others, they would get flogged for having done so, and they would say that all the clothing that they wore during that time, they would give to the poor as sort of a way to make up for having even worn clothing while worshiping other powers. All that shows that going into their houses of worship is still a very serious event, according to Chaim Falaji and according to the Tzitz Eliezer. And then I skipped a little bit. He quotes some things that point out that it's prohibited, even if they don't have any icons or idols of any sort. They don't have any physical representations in there. And therefore, he says there's no difference between a church and a monastery. Right? Monasteries didn't tend to have statues of any sort. They tended to be very sparse. You might have thought, it's true that they use this room for worship that we think of as a problem, but there's nothing in here that makes it a room. It's just an empty room. So he says, no, there's plenty of people who say that doesn't matter if there are no tzlamim, there are no representations, there are no physical statues, icons, crosses, or anything like that. Nonetheless, it still qualifies as a house of worship, and therefore it's still prohibited. So then, you heard from Shlomo Nahar that I hold that's true about all houses of worship, even if it's got a din, it's got the halacha of Avodah Zarah, even if it's just another religion, and it's not a pagan religion, it's not a religion that we halakhically define as idolatrous. So he says, yeah, there's a Ran in Sanhedrin who says explicitly, we realize that HaKadeshim Shel Kutim, so that's one set of religion we don't have to get into right now, because V'gam HaMishuga Shel Ha'ish Be'ilim. And also the crazy one of the Muslims, and by this he means Muhammad, their prophet. Afshein Tawin La'Sotan Elohut, even though they don't ascribe any divinity to Muhammad, Ho'il Mishtakavim Lifnehem Hashtakava'a Shel Hel Elohut. They bow down, what he defines as a bowing down of Elokut, of divinity. That's a very hard question, because there are bowings in halacha that could be out of respect, love, affection, and those are not idolatrous. Those are not worship. So it's this, I'm pretty sure, is understanding the Ran to mean is that when Muslims bow down to, they're not just bowing down to Allah, I said to God, to Hashem, they're also bowing down to Muhammad. Now they'll tell you they're bowing down out of respect or devotion, but because of, even in the Muslim religion, because of the role of Muhammad in that religion, this is understood to nonetheless have a din, have a halakhic status, and that's an important case where halakha might interpret something differently than even the adherents will claim they're doing. We might nonetheless say, yeah, that qualifies as worship, even though you're not thinking of it that way. That's very important for thinking about other religions too, especially Buddhism that I know of, that the way people talk about it. In any case, therefore, it has the isser of a place of avodah zara, of a place of worshiping a power other than Hashem. He says it's not just respect, it's not just hidur, giving them honor, because she'ain hidur lemeitim. Because as soon as somebody's dead, bowing down to them cannot be just an act of affection or respect or anything like that. It has an element of Elohut, of treating it, unfortunately, as divinity. That's what the Ran says. So he clearly includes the Muslims in that. And bowing down to their false prophet, that's got a status of Avodah Zarah. And therefore, that their houses of worship qualify for this as well. So that all, I know I've taken up 25 minutes in the prior tshuva, which is certainly cheating by me, and I apologize. And if you are offended, or not offended, or enjoy these, or don't enjoy these, love to hear from you, grothst@gmail.com. Let us therefore very quickly turn to the next response, which is the one that was dated to the 26th of Nisan, and was my excuse for getting to this conversation today. Volume 18, response number 47, can you go into a monastery? So a Rav Yaakov Rudman, who I don't know who that is, I couldn't find him online at all, I'm not sure, but he had written the Tzitzeliezer about this issue. Now it's interesting that 8 years later you get a letter from a guy who just sort of encountered your earlier volume. It's a reminder that not everybody reads everything at the same time, and you can years later be asked to have that conversation. So he, Tzitzeliezer, had relied on this Ran. So this Rav Rudman had said, but the Ran is a lone opinion, step A. So why do you know an apostate like him? That's an important question. And then step B, he says, if you look on the tshuvos of the Ran, quoted in the Beis Yosef to the tour, he seems to say the exact opposite. He seems to say that we don't have to treat Muslims as idolaters, as of the Avodah Zarah. So this says, you're right, in his chidushim, he's not talking about the Muslims themselves. Muslims as people, that's going to be one question. That's going to be what we dealt with in the responsum, and we'll get to that. In the chidushim, though, he's talking about the houses of worship, the places where they bow down and they pray. And when he talks about how kedesh yishalem, the places that they set aside as the places to worship. Whereas in the responsum, he's talking about the Muslims themselves. And so it's true. The Muslims themselves don't qualify as idolaters in the sense that if they touch wine, it becomes prohibited to drink from it, but not to get benefit from it, because they're not actual idolaters. So there's no problem nisuch that word that they libated. There's only a problem in terms of, intermarriage and things like that. And therefore, you don't drink it, but you can get benefit from it. But their houses of worship, the Ran thinks, are different for the reasons that we've already reviewed. And therefore, the distinction for the Ran is that when they touch wine, it's not prohibited b'hana'ah, because they're not of the Avodah Zarah mamish. They're not real of the Avodah Zarah. But their houses of worship nonetheless can have the status of a house of Avodah Zarah for all purposes, since Kenyan, as the Ran says, Kenyan Avodah Shel Elohut Hu Avodatan. It treats it as if it's a matter of Elohut, meaning that even though Muslims would clearly say to you, no, Muhammad isn't a god, no, I only believe in one God, the Tzitzeliezer is saying, based on this Ran, the fact that they bow to Muhammad, as well as to, their word is Allah, our would be Hashem, that bowing down, and the Ran says that when the bowing down happens to somebody who's no longer among the living, that is inherently an act of worship in the mode of divinity, even though the people will tell you they don't believe it as divine at all. And that means, now notice, it doesn't mean that they become of the Avodah Zarah. Why that is not clear, meaning I would have said, if you're going to tell me that it's Avodah Zarah, so I think the answer is that since they're clear, they don't mean it that way, and their action is in that way, they don't become of the Avodah Zarah in their person, but the place where all this happens becomes a place of Avodah Zarah. Now once you make that distinction between the place and the people, so then you can't also say, he says there's no proof that the Ran is a da'at yachid, is a lone opinion. Meaning, he doesn't mean that proves that he's not. it's true that all the other sources that we know of would say we don't treat Muslims as Avodah Avodazara, as worshiping a power other than Hashem, and that's true. So you might think, well, the Ram's the only one who said this, but the other point is, he's the only one who said this, but nobody else said anything else. Meaning, I don't have other sources, not me, this is Ezra saying, we don't have other sources that say that houses of worship of the Muslims are in fact fine because they're not idolaters, because they don't worship a power other than Hashem. We just have a bunch of sources that say that we don't treat Muslims like Avodah Zara because of the nature of their religion, but that doesn't mean the houses of worship and the Tzitzit and the Ran is the source of the idea that when it comes to the houses of worship, that we have to treat them as houses of Avodah Zarah. Now, it is true. He makes it says message very briefly, so we won't get into it. We can't, because he doesn't give us the sources. The Rambam has a response where he seems to mention their houses of worship as well, and the Rambam seems to hold their houses of worship, therefore, will not count as places of Avodah Zarah. So that parish of Mishnayos, for all that I said, that it really should be about mosques too, because he lives in a Muslim society, the Rambam apparently has a shiva where that's not true. But, says to the Ezer, but we have a principle in halacha, that halacha kebatrai, that when you have an earlier source and a later source, of equal relative authority, we follow the later source, because the later source saw the earlier source, thought about the reasoning behind the earlier source, and came to a different conclusion. Theoretically, you could say, but if the earlier source was around, he could argue back. It's true. We would prefer to be able to have all of them around, argue it out, take a vote, we would follow the majority. When we can't do that, the principle of halacha is halacha kebatrai. The Ran is clearly the batrai, because he lived several hundred years. He lived around 200 years after the Rambam, and he certainly knew the Rambam well. So if he comes to that conclusion, that seems to be a firm conclusion. So for the 26th of Nisan, really mostly for some other day, but for the 26th of Nisan, we have a follow-up tshuva, follow-up responsum of the Tzitz Eliezer, telling us or emphasizing his point that he believes that houses of worship in which certain things occur that have smack of worshiping any other than Hashem, including so far as to bow down out of what that person thinks is respect, but somebody who had passed away, will nevertheless qualify a place as a place of worship of power other than Hashem, even if the people and who worship there will not be qualified halachically, will not be termed halachically Avodah Avodah Zarah, they nonetheless qualify the place as it, and therefore one would not be allowed to enter that place. Not only would one not be allowed to enter that place, they would not be allowed to enter the courtyard of that place to benefit from even some ancillary things, such as talking to somebody, such as serving some need of the Jewish community, would not be allowed in any way whatsoever. The only exception, perhaps, being that if there's a road that goes through there to get completed to somebody else, that road one would be allowed to use. That is a response of the day for the 26th of Nisan. My name is Gideon Rothstein. The people bringing you this shiurim are the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromowitz, and David Hochhauser. Thank you to them. Thank you to you. Would love to hear from you. Have a great day.